Okay, so get this. We're diving into Korean politics.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. You sent over this book by a politician named Kim Kyung-jin.
Okay.
It's called Kim-kyun-dae, which translates to Kim Kyung-jin's Dream for Korea.
I like it.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Just the title alone has me intrigued.
Yeah, it's a really good choice for a deep dive. Getting into a primary source like this is so valuable. It's
Yeah.
like a direct line to understanding this figure's ambitions.
For sure.
And also, it gives us insight into Korean politics more broadly.
Okay, so right off the bat, the book dives into Kim's background, and it's not your typical politician's story.
Oh, how so?
So get this, the guy starts out wanting to be an astronomer.
Really?
Yeah, a scientist at heart.
Huh.
Then he veers into law, becomes a prosecutor.
Wow, that's quite a change.
I know, right? What do you think? How does that even happen?
Well, it's definitely an unusual path, but what I find really interesting is this thread of scientific curiosity that seems to run through his entire journey. Like, even as a prosecutor and then later on in politics, his focus on science and technology never really fades.
That's
It's
interesting.
almost like he's applying that analytical, truth-seeking mindset
Yeah.
from science to every challenge that he takes on.
Okay, so speaking of challenges, this guy jumps right into the deep end.
Okay.
The book talks about this wild episode in 2016, the Choi Soon-sil scandal.
Ah,
Now,
yes,
for those of
right.
us not up on our Korean political dramas, can you give us the SparkNotes version?
Well, imagine like a massive web of corruption and influence peddling
Yeah.
that reaches the highest levels of government.
Right.
So Choi Soon-sil, who was a close confidant of then President Park Geun-hye,
No.
is accused of using her relationship with the president for personal gain
Oh, wow.
and also meddling in state affairs.
So basically just taking advantage of her position.
Yeah, and the whole thing absolutely rocked South Korean society.
Okay, so we've got a major scandal. Public is outraged.
Yeah.
And enter Kim Kyung-jin, a freshman congressman at the time. And what does he do? He calls for the president's indictment.
Wow.
Talk about a
Him.
bold move.
Yeah, that's pretty rare. Was that typical for a rookie politician to go head to head with the president like that?
So it wasn't exactly typical. It was a huge risk,
Yeah.
especially for someone new to the political scene.
Right.
But from what I gather, Kim had this reputation for being a straight
Yeah.
shooter, someone who wasn't afraid to call out wrongdoing,
I see.
even if it meant challenging the most powerful person in the country.
Wow.
And the book actually quotes from his speech during a National Assembly session.
Yeah.
He just lays out the legal grounds for indictment. Bribery, abuse of power, revealing state
He
secrets.
was very thorough.
Yeah, it's like he's building a case right there on the floor.
Well, he wasn't just making accusations. He
Okay.
was meticulously presenting evidence, connecting the dots, and using his legal expertise to kind of dismantle the defense.
Wow.
And you know what? The public ate it up. They were craving someone who would cut through the noise and hold those in power accountable.
Makes sense.
And Kim's direct, uncompromising style really resonated with the public that was yearning for truth and justice.
Okay, so he calls out the president, but it doesn't stop there.
Oh.
The book goes on to describe his role in the Choi Soon-sil hearings.
Right.
So these were televised events where he basically grills these key figures, like Kim Ki-chun, the former presidential chief of staff, and Woo Byung-woo, a former senior presidential secretary. Was he like the star of these
Oh,
hearings?
he totally was. He became a media sensation.
Really?
Oh, yeah. People were glued to their screens watching him dissect these evasive answers
Huh.
and expose inconsistencies in the testimony.
Wow.
He even earned nicknames like Truth Fairy and Angry Fairy.
Okay, Angry Fairy. I kind of love that.
Yeah, it kind of captures that mix of meticulousness and righteous anger that he brought to those hearings.
And there's this one story that really stuck with me.
What's that?
So he's questioning this Woo Byung-woo, and out of nowhere, he just asks him, "Have you had a meal?" It
Okay.
seems so random.
Right.
Was that some kind of power play?
Well, actually, it's a classic interrogation tactic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, often
Yeah.
used by prosecutors to kind of unsettle a suspect.
Okay.
So, by asking this seemingly innocuous question, Kim threw Woo off balance.
Interesting.
Yeah, created a moment of vulnerability.
I see.
And, in the context of those high-profile hearings, it also highlighted the stark contrast between Kim's straightforward approach
Yeah.
and the perceived arrogance and obfuscation of those in power.
So it's like he's using his legal skills to expose the truth,
Yeah.
but there's also this deeper connection to his scientific background.
Right.
He's applying that same kind of analytical rigor, that pursuit of evidence, to this messy world of politics.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to see how those two worlds collide in his approach.
Absolutely. And it doesn't end there. This commitment to uncovering the truth and understanding how things work seems to be at the heart of his advocacy for science and technology.
Okay.
He sees it as absolutely essential for Korea's future success.
And he's not just talking about it. He actually spearheaded the creation of this whole agency, the Science and Technology Innovation Headquarters.
Yes, that's a big deal.
Right. It's basically in charge of Korea's entire research and development budget.
It is. And setting it up wasn't a walk in the park.
I bet.
You know, he faced opposition, especially from the Ministry of Economy and Finance.
Oh, I can imagine. They're always worried about the bottom line.
Always. But Kim was adamant that investing in science and technology was not just an expense, but a critical investment in Korea's future.
So was he just naturally persuasive, or did something else help him win that battle?
Well, it seems like it was a combination of things. He's incredibly passionate about science.
Right.
And that really comes through in everything he does.
Yeah.
He can also explain complex concepts in a way that makes sense to people.
Okay.
Even those without a scientific background.
That's a valuable skill.
Oh, for sure. And he's also relentless.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He doesn't back down easily when he believes in something.
So this is where I start to wonder, what kind of future did he actually have in mind? What was his vision for Korea?
Well, his book actually gets into that.
Oh, good.
And it's pretty ambitious. He dives into specific areas he's passionate about. Everything from basic research and STEM education to space exploration and the role of technology in addressing societal challenges.
It sounds like he had big plans.
He did. He had this big picture thinking.
Yeah.
That connected scientific advancements with economic growth, social progress, even national pride.
Okay. I am hooked. Let's unpack this vision.
Okay.
What are some of the key areas that he focused on? Where did he see the biggest opportunities for Korea to leverage science and technology?
Well, one area that really jumps out is his focus on space exploration.
Space exploration.
Yeah, it's like he sees it as this ultimate frontier for scientific advancement and a way for Korea to assert itself on the global stage.
Right.
He even talks about establishing a dedicated Korean space agency.
Whoa, a Korean space agency.
Yeah.
That would be huge.
I know, right? I mean, Korea is already a tech powerhouse.
Yeah.
But having their own space program would put them in a whole other league.
So did he have any specific plans for what this agency would focus on?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
He definitely saw it as a way to push the boundaries of human knowledge.
Right.
And inspire future generations of Korean scientists.
Right.
In the book, he talks about wanting to develop advanced satellite technology, explore the moon and Mars, and even contribute to international collaborations.
What?
Like the International Space Station.
Wow. So it reminds me of that whole space race mentality back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Except this time, it's not about competing with other superpowers, but about pushing the limits of what's possible and establishing Korea as a leader in space exploration. Did he face any pushback on this idea? I mean, space exploration is expensive.
Oh, there were definitely skeptics who questioned the practicality of investing in such a grand vision.
Right.
Especially given the costs involved.
Yeah.
But Kim was able to point to the success of the NARO.
The NARO?
Yeah. Korea's first launch vehicle.
Okay.
Which successfully launched a satellite into orbit back in 2013.
Oh, wow.
He argued that this demonstrated Korea's growing capabilities in space technology and that further investment would not only yield scientific breakthroughs, but also create new industries and jobs.
That makes sense. It's about taking calculated risks, investing in the future.
Exactly.
But it's not just about rockets and satellites, is it? The book also highlights his passion for basic research.
That's right.
That foundation of scientific discovery that doesn't always have immediate applications.
Absolutely. He argues that investing in fundamental science is essential for long-term innovation and economic growth.
Mm.
It's about fostering a culture of scientific inquiry.
Okay.
Pushing the boundaries of knowledge, even if the practical applications aren't immediately apparent.
So it's like he's saying, don't just focus on what we can build today. Let's explore the fundamental principles that will lead to the breakthroughs of tomorrow. Did he have any specific examples of areas where he thought basic research could lead to major advancements?
Yeah, he talks a lot about materials, science, nanotechnology, and biotechnology.
Okay.
He believed that breakthroughs in these fields could lead to revolutionary new products and solutions for challenges in healthcare, energy, and environmental sustainability.
And it's not just about the research itself.
Right.
He also talks about the importance of STEM education, right?
Yes.
Like making sure Korea has a pipeline of talented scientists and engineers to drive this innovation.
Absolutely. he emphasizes improving STEM education at all levels, from primary school to university.
Wow.
He saw it as crucial for ensuring that Korea had the workforce to compete in a global economy, increasingly driven by technological advancements.
So he's got this grand vision for science and technology on a national scale.
Yeah.
But he's also thinking about how to bring these advancements to his own district.
Yes, Gwangju.
Gwangju, right.
Yes. And here's where we see him grapple with more regional concerns like economic development and infrastructure. He's looking for ways to attract tech companies and research institutions to Gwangju, create high-paying jobs, and boost the local economy.
And surprise, surprise, he wants to bring in more science and technology.
Of course.
I read about his push for improved transportation links, especially high-speed rail, connecting Gwangju to other major cities.
Right. He argued that better transportation would not only make it easier for people to get to Gwangju,
right,
but also create opportunities for collaboration between researchers, businesses, and universities across the country.
It's like he's saying, let's break down these geographical barriers and create a more connected Korea where innovation can flourish everywhere.
Did he face any obstacles in trying to implement these ideas at the local level?
Oh, there were certainly challenges. Mm-hmm. Budgetary constraints, political rivalries, the usual hurdles.
Yeah, it comes with the territory.
Right. But his scientific background, that ability to think strategically and solve problems, seemed to serve him well in navigating those local politics. It's interesting to see how he's able to connect these big picture ideas about science and technology to the very specific needs of his constituents.
Definitely.
But let's be real. No politician gets everything right.
Yeah.
What about the less popular aspects of his platform? The book mentioned some pushback on his stance regarding regulating tech giants.
Yes.
And his critique of certain government policies. Right?
Yes. Those are areas where his views might have ruffled some feathers.
I can imagine.
Especially among those who see unfettered technological development as the path to progress.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
All right. All right, so we've talked about Kim Kingjin's vision for science and technology, but the book also dives into some areas where his stance might have been a little more controversial, especially when it comes to regulating those massive tech companies, the ones that are practically woven into the fabric of everyday life in Korea.
You're talking about those Portal 3 laws he proposed, aimed squarely at companies like Naver and Kakao.
Exactly. Remember, these are essentially the Google and Amazon of Korea, controlling a huge amount of information flow and online commerce.
And he didn't shy away from calling them out, did he? The book mentions his concerns about their potential to manipulate search results, control news feeds, even favor certain businesses or political viewpoints.
He was deeply concerned about the concentration of power in the hands of these tech giants and the potential for them to stifle competition, manipulate public opinion, and erode democratic values. He saw those Portal 3 laws as a way to ensure more transparency and accountability in their algorithms and prevent them from becoming too dominant.
That's a pretty bold stance for a politician, especially one who's so enthusiastic about technology in general. It's like he's saying innovation is great, but not if it comes at the cost of fairness and a level playing field.
Yeah.
Did that create any tension with his overall pro-science, pro-technology message?
It definitely sparked debate. Some saw it as a contradiction, accusing him of being anti-business or stifling innovation. But Kim argued that it was about finding the right balance, ensuring that technology serves society, not the other way around. He believed that responsible regulation was essential for fostering a healthy tech ecosystem that benefits everyone.
It's interesting how this debate mirrors what we're seeing in other parts of the world, too.
Yeah.
Right? The whole conversation about the power of big tech, the need for ethical guidelines, the role of government in regulating these massive platforms.
Absolutely. It's a global conversation. And Kim's perspective on this issue highlights the complexities we're all grappling with as technology becomes more and more intertwined with our lives.
But it wasn't just big tech that he challenged. The book also mentions his criticism of some of the government's own policies, particularly when it came to energy.
Yes, his scientific background heavily influenced his views on energy policy. He was a vocal critic of Korea's reliance on nuclear power, citing safety concerns and the long-term challenges of nuclear waste disposal.
Which is a particularly sensitive issue in Korea, given their limited landmass and the potential risks associated with earthquakes, right?
Exactly. Kim advocated for a shift towards renewable energy sources like solar and wind power. He argued that it was a more sustainable and safer path for Korea's energy future, even if it meant overcoming the challenges of transitioning away from a well-established nuclear infrastructure.
So we've got this politician who's deeply passionate about science and technology, but he's also willing to challenge the status quo, whether it's taking on powerful corporations or questioning his own government's policies. What did people make of this? Was he seen as a maverick, a troublemaker, a visionary?
He was definitely seen as a unique figure in Korean politics, someone who didn't fit neatly into any ideological box. Some admired his courage and conviction, his willingness to stand up for what he believed in, even when it was unpopular. Others saw him as too idealistic, too focused on long-term goals at the expense of immediate concerns.
It sounds like he wasn't afraid to make people think, to challenge assumptions, to spark those tough conversations that are sometimes necessary to move society forward.
That's what I find so compelling about his story. He represents this fascinating intersection of science, technology, and politics. He understood the power of innovation, but also recognized the need for ethical considerations, responsible regulation, and a focus on the long-term well-being of society.
So after diving into this book, what's your takeaway? What's the one thing you hope our listener walks away with?
I think Kim Kung-jin's story offers a valuable lesson for all of us, regardless of where we live or what our political beliefs are. It's a reminder that science and technology are not just abstract concepts or tools for economic growth. They're deeply intertwined with our lives, our values, and our future. And it's up to all of us to engage in those conversations, to ask those tough questions, to ensure that these powerful forces are used to create a better world for everyone.
Well said. And to our listener, we leave you with this. As you go about your day, think about the role science and technology play in your own life, your community, your country. And ask yourself, are we having those tough conversations? Are we holding our leaders accountable? Are we using these powerful forces to create the future we want? Because the choices we make today will shape the world of tomorrow.
We were talking about Kim Kung-jin and his views on tech regulation.
Right, like how he wanted to regulate those big tech companies.
Yeah, and you were saying how those views might have been controversial.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, on one hand, he's all about science and technology, but then he's also saying, hey, we need to regulate these massive tech companies.
Right, and those companies are a huge part of daily life in Korea.
Exactly. We're talking about companies like Naver and Kakao.
Right, essentially the Google and Amazon of Korea.
Yeah, they control so much information and commerce online.
They do, and Kim Kung-jin was really concerned about that.
You can tell from the book that he was worried about those companies becoming too powerful.
Yeah, he saw the potential for them to manipulate search results, control news feeds, even favor certain businesses or political viewpoints.
And he called them out on it, right? He didn't just sit back and let it happen.
No, he didn't. He proposed these Portal 3 laws aimed at making those companies more transparent and accountable.
So basically, he wanted to make sure they weren't abusing their power.
Exactly. He wanted to protect competition, prevent manipulation of public opinion, and make sure those companies were serving society, not the other way around.
That's a pretty bold stance for a politician, especially one who's so gung-ho about technology.
It was. And it definitely caused some friction.
I bet. Some people probably saw it as hypocritical.
Right. Like, how can you be pro-technology and also want to regulate these tech giants?
Yeah, but Kim argued that it was about finding the right balance.
Exactly. He believed that responsible regulation was essential for a healthy tech ecosystem.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not about stifling innovation. It's about making sure it benefits everyone.
And it's interesting because this whole debate about regulating big tech is happening all over the world.
It is. It's a global conversation. And Kim Kung-jin's perspective highlights how complex this issue really is.
Okay, so it wasn't just big tech that Kim challenged. He also had some strong opinions about the government's energy policies.
That's right. And his scientific background really shaped his thinking on this issue.
He was especially critical of Korea's reliance on nuclear power.
He was. He had serious concerns about safety and the long-term challenges of nuclear waste disposal.
Which makes sense when you consider Korea's limited landmass and the risk of earthquakes.
Exactly. And he pushed for a shift toward renewable energy sources like solar and wind power.
Did he think that was a more realistic option for Korea?
He did. He saw it as a more sustainable and safer path for the future.
Even though it would mean transitioning away from a well-established nuclear infrastructure.
Right, which is never easy.
So we have this politician, Kim Kung-jin, who is super passionate about science and technology, but also not afraid to challenge the status quo.
Yeah, whether it's taking on big corporations or questioning his own government's policies.
How was he perceived by the public? Was he seen as a maverick? A troublemaker.
He was definitely a unique figure in Korean politics. Some people really admired his courage and conviction.
I can see why.
They respected his willingness to stand up for what he believed in, even if it wasn't popular.
Sounds like he wasn't afraid to ruffle some feathers.
He wasn't. But that's what made him so interesting. He made people think, challenged assumptions, and sparked important conversations.
Exactly. And sometimes those tough conversations are exactly what we need to move society forward.
I completely agree.
So after diving into Kim Kung-jen's world, what's the big takeaway? What do you hope our listeners think about after hearing all of this?
Well, I think his story is a powerful reminder that science and technology are not just abstract ideas. They're deeply intertwined with our lives, our values, and our future.
And it's up to us to engage in those conversations, right? To make sure these powerful forces are used responsibly.
Exactly. We need to ask tough questions, hold our leaders accountable, and make sure we're shaping the future we want.
Because in the end, it's the choices we make today that will determine what tomorrow looks like.
Couldn't said it better myself.
Thanks for taking this deep dive with me.
It was my pleasure. And to our listeners out there, thanks for joining us. Keep those questions coming and keep exploring the fascinating world where science, technology, and politics collide.